it runs in the face of often what everybody else in the world is doing. And also, sometimes spiritual practice in the short term feels challenging, feels, why am I doing this? Why am I practicing meditation or generosity? Or why am I being sober? Why am I doing all this stuff when everybody else in the world is acting out, getting drunk, going to parties, dancing to club music? Why am I doing this? And the idea is that the Buddha taught that obviously some of the practices in life feel really good in the short term, but in the long term, they don't bring us any peace of mind, tranquility, or lasting happiness. And some practices, on the other hand, in the short term, feel difficult and challenging, like sitting quietly on New Year's Eve, feel odd. And yet, in the long term, for the year that follows, they actually bring about a sense of great purposefulness, ease, a sense of having a life that's guided by principles that are blameless and esteemable. There's a sense of when we try to pursue the sort of short-term happiness that's available and that most people seek after, the happiness that's from money, material things, trying to get laid, trying to get drunk and high, trying to be where everybody is, trying to have as many Facebook friends as quickly as we possibly can. There's the gratification, the Buddha says, in these things is real, but it's very short term. It's not something that we remember for a long time afterwards. But when we act out of a sense of spiritual effort, that where we put some energy into our spiritual life, we actually not only do we remember it for a long time afterwards, but we have a different feeling about ourselves for a long time afterwards. I know that the first time I spent New Year's Eve meditating many years ago, at first it felt strange and unusual, and then over time, the weeks and months that followed, the year had an entirely different feeling to it. And I started thinking of myself as somebody who would meditate on New Year's Eve as opposed to, you know, just having to do what I was told I had to do, which was find the party where all my friends were at and go there and whatever. So we get to define ourselves in an entirely different way from choice, as opposed from having it dictated by the world, by what everybody else says is what you're supposed to do. We actually get to do something that's pretty unique. It is, the vast majority of people in the world are not meditating tonight, I can guarantee you that. So at the very least, you're a part of something that's very special and takes effort to do, because it does take effort to practice against the grain. But then the Buddha did say that true happiness does lie in pursuing practices that are not what everybody else is doing, because most people are spending their lives chasing happiness in all the wrong places. We're looking for happiness in, for instance, worrying about how much money we'll have in our retirement, We spend our lives looking. Some people put off their happiness hoping that they'll one day win the lottery, which is an interesting thing. I actually read this fascinating study where they actually did a study of people who won the lottery, and they found out that a year later, none of them were any happier than they were before they won the lottery. And then they did this, and they compared them against a baseline group of just normal people who had not won the lottery, and they found that there was no significant shift in reported happiness or peace of mind or suicidal ideations in people. People were, after the initial bump of, oh my God, I won the lottery, I'm rich, they just went, oh shit, I still got my problems. I'm still aging. I'm still a human being. I still got a mind that does what I don't want it to do. I'm still obsessive. I still don't feel good in my own skin. None of those things are solved by pursuing happiness in the world outside of us. The real happiness we're after comes from learning to feel comfortable in our own skin, learning to feel comfortable in our own mind. They also did a study with people who suddenly became paralyzed. And they discovered that those two didn't have a significant dip in their happiness over the after a year had passed. It turns out that people's long-term peace of mind is not really affected by how much money they have or how many things they have or even what the conditions so much of their bodies are, as opposed to simply, they found out in the study, the things that do bring about long-term happiness and peace of mind are practicing things like generosity, goodwill to yourself and other people, gratitude for the spiritual and the skillful things you've done, gratitude for the things that people have done for you, appreciation for just what you have accomplished to help others in life. These are the things that bring about lasting peace of mind, happiness. And there was a great study where they gave people money and they said half of the people had to spend it on themselves and half of the people had to spend it on other people. And the ones who spent the money on themselves, I think it was like $20 or $30, couldn't remember 6 months later what they spent the money on. They didn't feel any better about themselves. There was no change whatsoever about how they felt. The ones who spent the money, gave the money away to someone, actually 6 months later could still recall exactly who they gave the money to, still felt good about it, and kept in touch with the person that they gave the money to, even if it was a complete stranger. So this is the lasting kinds of happiness. In the New Year's Eve ceremony, we do two things, which is we take the precepts and we take the refuges. The precepts are basically refraining from causing harm, practicing refraining from causing harm to other beings. That's basically what they are. They're practices. Nobody gets them perfect. And they're not like the... In Buddhism, there is no God overlooking, keeping track of you. There's no Santa Claus knowing if you're naughty or nice. The reason why we try to refrain from causing harm to other beings is because, as the Buddha said, that's what makes us feel good about ourselves. If we cause harm, if our happiness is contingent upon other beings suffering, then we've made our entire happiness contingent upon something that we have very little control over. We think of ourselves as somebody who needs to hurt other beings, or steal, or lie to get what we need. It gives us the idea that our true happiness comes from outside of ourselves as opposed to within ourselves. So the precepts are practices of simply letting go of our tendency to try to get our happiness and our peace of mind by taking from other beings, by manipulating the world. So that will point our focus of our actions for looking for peace of mind in another direction. The Buddha said, I love this quote, he said, if we don't cause harm, then if there is a world after death, in other words, if you're lucky enough to get reborn, if you believe that, that having not wished or caused harm to anyone will lead us to a good destination. But even if there is no world after death, in other words, if you don't believe in rebirth, then having not caused harm or even wished to cause harm, my mind will be at ease. It will be free from the agitation and hostility and trouble that those kinds of thoughts cause. And this is pretty observable. If you've ever been pissed off at somebody or angry, you know all the way your mind and your body feels. You're releasing lots of cortisol, you're stressed out, you feel uncomfortable in your own skin. If there's any time that addicts use and drinkers drink and people who have sex or eat compulsively do that, it's when they're angry or uncomfortable. On the other hand, when we're not thinking thoughts of anger and greed, when we're just thinking thoughts of generosity, goodwill, focusing our attention to bringing about a sense of peace within, that's a mind that feels really good. That's a mind that doesn't need to grasp, cling, find happiness in short-term solutions. It's a mind that's really comfortable. It's a mind that feels good. So the Buddha's saying, we're doing this, again, not to appease some god, not to be goody-two-shoes. We take the precepts because they're the foundations of pointing us in the right direction. And they're also the kinds of activities, letting go of killing, stealing, lying, causing harm through intoxication or through sex, causing any form of harm, when we let go of that, we feel better about ourselves. We feel good in our own minds. So it's a practice. Again, when we fall short, when we find ourselves lying just to get us out of a difficult situation, and we all do that at times, if you've not been invited to hear somebody sing, and then they come up to you after they've had a perfectly awful performance and they say, how was it? And you don't, and at one point in your life saying, oh, you were terrific. You're better than I am. Because I think we all, at one point or another in our lives, try to get out of difficult situations by coming up with little lies, as opposed to seeing how we can use the truth and be honest, but without causing harm. We've all, at some point in our life, caused harm through being drunk, or have slept with the wrong people, have done something while we weren't mindful and caused harm. So no one is perfect, and none of the precepts are about trying to be perfect. We're not here trying to be monks. What we are trying to do is trying to see, when we fall short, that these kinds of actions don't make us feel good in the long term, and then just simply saying, acknowledging it. Okay, when I get angry and lash out at somebody out of frustration, when I take this action that causes me harm, when I act out of greed, it doesn't make me feel good. It doesn't make me feel better about myself. It makes my mind feel agitated. So I'll try something else the next time. That's the spirit. It's not about beating up on ourselves. It's not about any form of calling ourselves any names or passing judgments. That's not what this practice is about. Simply acknowledging which actions cause us suffering and moving on. So the heart of the Buddha's teachings are that our intentions lie at the core of how we feel about ourselves. Even if we don't act out on an intention, if we're sitting there thinking, boy, I'd love to really kill that person. Boy, I'd really like to get even with that person. Then while we're thinking that, even though we haven't acted out on it, we're still stressed out. There's still a level of suffering. So at the very core, if we want to transform our minds from minds that are agitated and uncomfortable to minds that feel good, we have to be open not only to examining our actions, but examining our speech and our thoughts as well. Again, we're doing this so we will achieve some form of lasting inner peace. We're not doing this to become perfect Buddhists or anything like that. You don't have to be a Buddhist. Please, if you're not a Buddhist, don't become one. Stay whatever you are. This is not a practice of becoming. It's a practice of ending suffering. So this is very much about setting intentions. The Buddha said that the core of spiritual practice is about replacing intentions that cause suffering and stress, intentions like seeking our happiness from pleasing everyone, intentions like seeking our happiness in monetary or very short-lasting sensual pleasures that are addictive, to intentions like, for example, mindfulness, staying aware of what's going on in your body throughout the course of the day, noticing when you're getting stressed out during the course of life, and before you act or speak, relax, breathe, calm the body. Then you know what you'll say and do will be much less likely to cause harm, to cause unnecessary suffering to yourself or to someone else. Another good example is practicing appreciation of all the skillful things, appreciating that you're even here on a New Year's Eve, appreciating all the times that you've shown interest and helped someone. These are the examples of focusing the mind on intentions that last, that feel good in the long term. So the second part of the ceremony is the taking refuge. And that's basically what's known as seeking refuge, the triple gem, the Dharma, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. Which basically means, in the triple gem, seeking refuge in the Buddha doesn't mean treating the Buddha like a god. The Buddha's dead. He's been dead for 2,500 years. He's not around anymore. He's not listening to you. He's gone. So what it means is, in fact, simply reminding ourselves that the Buddha was a guy who, like so many other spiritual seekers, he's just an example, he let go of his riches, his all of his friends for a while, all of his wealth, his comfort, his security, and he went out into the forest and for 6 years set about trying to find a peace of mind that came from within, that didn't require stealing or killing, that was utterly blameless. And he found it. He found it through the Eightfold Path. He found it through basically refraining from causing harm and cultivating an inner peace through our meditation, through our practice. The seeking refuge in the Dharma is simply seeking refuge or reminding ourselves from the core teaching, which is basically that we are the authors of our own happiness. Happiness doesn't come from by accident. It doesn't come from winning the lottery. It doesn't come from somebody who's really good looking suddenly deciding that you're the creme de la creme and wanting to have endless sex with you forever. It doesn't come with, it doesn't come from, because even that would get boring and tedious. So, the idea is that the Dhamma is showing that, in fact, there is lasting happiness, but it comes from, first of all, letting go of our tendency to try to get it from outside of ourselves, trying to compact the mind with all the things out in the world, somehow try to get all the riches and material wealth and people and somehow out there scrunch it into our minds so that our minds will feel better, that we'll feel better in our own bodies. That's not going to work. The only way we can feel lasting peace of mind is by practicing sitting in our minds and feeling comfortable in it. It's a practice. It takes lots of work. And the Buddha gave us a hint, as did so many other spiritual teachers. He simply said that a good place to start is by practicing the kinds of thoughts that cause long-term happiness, like, again, gratitude, generosity, goodwill, staying balanced, practicing restraints, practicing goodwill. I said goodwill, so you get the idea. There are, though, ten, I'll be going through the 10 mental states that always bring about lasting peace of mind in the new year. So there are 10 mental states that develop long-term peace of mind. It's not like there's only a very few. There's actually a lot of things we can think about and reflect. We can develop very calm concentration on our meditation, which develops a state of lasting inner peace. Finally, the third triple gem is seeking the friendship of other spiritual practitioners, finding people who are, like yourself, looking for happiness in a place that's lasting, that offers us a real sustainable sense of tranquility. It's important to have spiritual practitioners in your life. It's very, very difficult having a spiritual path on your own. It's very challenging if everybody is in our lives is going in the direction of finding their happiness in their careers or finding their happiness solely in their relationships. Some people try to find their happiness in their families entirely. Some people try to find their happiness in a job or a project or a piece of art that they're making or a novel that they're writing. And there's nothing wrong with putting one's energies into any of this stuff, but when we put our energies for searching for lasting peace of mind into something that is not dependable. Other people's praise is not dependable. The family is not dependable. One's jobs are not dependable. They're good things. It's good things to have. Good to have a family. Good to have a job. Good to have a shelter. They're all necessary to survive. But if that's where we're making all of our lasting inner peace of mind dependent on, then all those things at one point or another can let us down. On the other hand, a spiritual practice can't. And having spiritual practitioners that you know in your life is a good place to share how difficult it is, get a sense of hope from seeing other people who were suffering and then are not suffering anymore. One get such great sense of possibilities, seeing people who come into any Buddhist center, any 12-step meeting, suffering, and then over the course of a short period of time, wind up peaceful and happy. And none of these people generally give up their jobs. They don't give up their relationships. They don't become monks. They don't act like Hare Krishnas in the airports. You don't have to do any of that stuff. It's just about balance. It's about seeking some of our lasting peace of mind through spiritual practice. That's tough. It's good to have other people in your life who are practicing along with you. So again, the ceremony is one of taking the precepts against setting our intentions to forego killing, stealing, harmful speech, acting out and causing harm through sex and through intoxication. Now, for those of you who can drink, and that's, you can drink. It's about not causing harm while you're drinking. So, and if you are in a, every time anybody has ever in the history of Dharma talks talked about the precepts, has talked about not causing harm through sexuality, there's always one person who raises their hand and says, well, I'm in a loving relationship with three people at the same time. Is there anything wrong with that? No, there's nothing wrong about it. It's about not causing harm. So again, I'm not, I don't give a shit what your relationship status is. The Buddha's dead, so he doesn't give a shit either. It's just about not causing harm. And that's easy to tell. You know when you're stressed out and suffering, and you can probably tell when you're causing someone to be stressed out and suffering. So the idea is to let go of the behaviors that cause suffering to other beings and to ourselves. Balance is all about remembering, by the way, that it's not a good idea to try to rescue other people at the expense of ourselves. We only try to help as much as we can without causing ourselves unnecessary suffering. So that's also one of the esteemed mind states we'll be talking about in the New Year's. So it's now 11:30, and I thought what I'd do is spend the rest of the time. Well, before I send it in a circle, I was going to say the last thing. If you've never gone on a day-long retreat, a good intention to set is to consider at some point in the new year trying to do a half a day if you've never done a half a day, or day long, or if you've done a day long, try to do 2 days of going on a retreat. There are many retreats in the New York area. The reason why retreats are so powerful is because they give us the time to step aside from all of the shoulds and responsibilities in our life, all the expectations that we're living under, and they give us an opportunity to just put aside everything and just see what is really going on in our minds, see how agitated we really are, see how comfortable we are in our own skin. And then when we return to our day-to-day lives, our jobs, our responsibilities, all the things we've undertaken, we can see just how much, believe me, when you step back into your life from retreat, you can see just how stressful your life is. It's like when you go through a very quiet, peaceful meditation, and then the bell goes off, and then you remember that thing that's been stressing you out, and the mind's like, oh my God. It's that feeling that you see just how much stress we live with in our lives. And that's very helpful because it gives us a sense of priority. And we can only get that sense of what, is this action that I'm taking worth all the stress it's bringing? Is this job worth all the stress it's bringing me? Is trying to show up for my family as often as I do? Is it worth all the stresses that it's bringing me? Is my whatever worth all the stress that it's bringing me? So, now I'd like to, as part of the New Year's practice, like to send it around in a circle, giving you all an opportunity, if you want. If you don't feel like sharing, you don't have to even just say, I pass, or it's just nice to be here, or this sucks, I can't believe I'm not getting drunk, or whatever you want to say. It's a good time to state what our spiritual intention is for the new year. I know that I'm definitely stating my intention, which is to, I'd like to, at some point this winter, get away and do some meditation somewhere warm. Every winter I do a retreat with my teacher, but he generally comes here. It's generally not me going to see him, so I'm hoping to go someplace and spend a few quiet days just meditating by myself. Someplace warm, and continue here with all those who join us at Dharma Punks. It's definitely the most worthwhile experience in my life, the Dharma Punks community that has been here, and all the people I know and get to meet. So that's about it, and I'm going to send it to Kathy.
I think my intention for, I have a number of different intentions. I got laid off this time last year, and as a result, I stopped shopping. Like, I didn't use my credit card to the point where, like, I didn't even have to open the bill because there was nothing on there. And when I started working again, I started shopping again. And I immediately felt that kind of hungry ghost wake up. Like, like, I hadn't even been looking at, like, all the sample sale emails and, you know.